Follow me down this deep, dark hole.
Hello, and welcome to New Horror Express, your fortnightly podcast talking to the best indie talent the horror genre has to offer. I'm your host, Scott Murphy, and on today's episode, I'm chatting to filmmaking collective Radio Silence, consisting of Matt Bedinelli Open, Tyler Gillette, and Chad Villala, all about their new movie, Ready or Not, which at the time of recording had just premiered at Fantasia Fest. Over the course of the interview, we chat about how they came on board to the project, how they pulled its starry cast together, and what their joint directorial process is like. Also, away from Ready or Not, we get into the formation and history of Radio Silence up until this point. I will not go into any further detail about the interview, but before we do get into it, I will say the best way you can support New Horror Express is to rate, review, and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, on Stitcher, and on Radio Public. Anyway, now that plug's out of the way, on to the interview with Chad, Matt, and Tyler.
Hi, Matt, Chad, Tyler. Welcome to New Horror Express.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
So I have you on the show today to talk about your new movie, Ready or Not, which recently, just at the weekend, premiered at Fantasia Fest, and will be coming to the UK for Fright Fest. So for people who don't know about the film, tell us a little bit about Ready or Not.
All right. So Ready or Not is a feature that we made with Fox Searchlight, and it follows a young woman named Grace, who's played by Samara Weaving, as she marries into this crazy wealthy family. And she realizes on her wedding night that to be welcomed into the family, like all of the other individuals who have married into it, she has to play a game. And we kind of learned that this family's wealth has been amassed via this series of board games and sporting teams that they've created and that they own. And she draws the one bad card, the one card you don't want to draw, hide and seek, and ends up spending the remainder of the night fighting for her life.
As one
does. In a nutshell, yeah.
So, how did you guys first come on board to this picture? What was the what attracted you to this film, your latest feature?
Go for it, Chad.
No, I was definitely going to say the script. I'm sure you guys feel the same way, but when we read the script the first time, we knew comedy in a way like nothing else we've read, and we just were really attracted to that right from the start.
I was also intrigued by some of the casting choices. How did the kind of cast come together? Excuse me. I noticed like Samara Weaving's in the picture. She obviously has been in a couple of other horror comedies like Mayhem and The Babysitter. Had you seen them? Is that what made you want to get her for the part of Grace?
Yeah, Grace was the first person who got on board. I'm sorry, Samara was the first person who got on board, and she had worked with Fox Searchlight before on Three Billboards, and they loved her, so they kind of, you know, sent her our way, and we were instantly fans. And then we met with her, had a Skype with her when she was shooting, I think, Guns Akimbo, and we just really clicked. And once she, you know, decided to join the team, which we are still so grateful for because she's just amazing. The rest of the cast, we kind of formed around her, and it was building the family that was going to be her adversaries. Over the next couple months, we did it all fairly quickly, and a lot of the cast were like the first or second person we saw for the role. Melanie, plays Emily, and Christian, who plays Fitch, and
Elise.
Nikki. Yeah. Yeah, Elise, Nikki. I think they were all the first or second auditions that we saw for those roles, and everybody just kind of knocked it out of the park, and you kind of see the family forming before our eyes. And then Andy McDowell and Henry came on, and that was, they're the matriarch and patriarch of the family, and it just all kind of fell into place. And, you know, to be honest, we were a little nervous going into this very fast shoot. We only had 26 days with an ensemble cast, most of whom we had only met once or twice before. We were all in Toronto together, and we literally couldn't say nicer things about everybody involved. It was just a real charmed experience, and everybody really clicked right away. So,
yeah, and so much of how efficient it was, we think, you know, has to do with the script that Guy and Ryan wrote. It was so specific in its weird tone that if somebody read it and liked it and wanted to be involved in the movie, we knew they at least shared some taste with us, some creative taste. And the fact that, yeah, we showed up with just 26 days to make this project, and that everyone was so on board to make the same movie from the start. It's really, you know, it's a testament to how fun and specific that script is.
Yeah. Just a quick side note. When you got the script, did you make the same mistake that I made when I first looked up the film on IMDb and assumed that it was the Ryan Murphy of American Horror Story fame and not a separate Ryan Murphy?
Yes.
Yes.
Definitely. Yeah, absolutely did.
And that actually very, very hilariously came up multiple times during, you know, during hiring department heads and cast, where people were like, oh, we're so excited to work with Ryan Murphy. And then we had to break the news to them that it was Ryan Christopher Murphy, who is a lovely, lovely guy and a great writer.
Also,
as much success as Ryan Murphy. Ryan
very
Murphy.
Talented. We like our Ryan Murphy a lot.
How does your Ryan Murphy feel about that? But it must be very difficult when you have a more famous person who also has your name.
Yeah, it's got to. We never really talked to him about it, to be honest, because we just had to ask him when we were in, at some form, I think we were doing credits or something on the movie, and we were just like, hey, man, are you going to be Ryan Murphy on this movie? I feel like there's like a WGA rule against that or something. And he just said, you know, our Christopher Murphy. So, you know, we can just call him our Chris.
Yeah. Also, I'm pretty sure there's probably other Ryan Murphys out there in the world too, so they all could take credit for it.
that is true. I'm sure there is a lot of Ryan Murphys. But I mean, like, I approve generally. You know, I'm a Murphy myself. So
yeah. You know any Ryans?
Yeah. So going back to the cast, there's a few people in there who you wouldn't naturally associate with horror, particularly Andy McDowell, who's obviously most famous for her romantic comedies like Four Weddings and Funeral, Groundhog's Day, you know, all that kind of stuff. So what made you cast them for the part, particularly Andy McDowell?
I think that, I mean, one of the things that intrigued us about the project from the start is that it didn't feel, it sort of masquerades a little bit as a horror film, but there's so much going on in the story that's not specifically that. And the second that you think it's going to be one thing, it's something else. And for us, that really created an opportunity for us to cast really great dramatic actors in these roles, and to bring people on board who were also excited to try something new. You know, Andy told us very early on in the process that that she'd actually never thrown a punch on camera. She'd never been in a filmed
or fight. Off.
Yeah, or off camera. She's actually a bit of a brawler off camera. And our first day of shooting, we actually was this big fight between Grace, the character played by Samara, and Becky, the character played by Andy. And we really loved that there was so much meat on the bone for all of these characters to tackle, that we didn't have to just cast who you would expect to be in the genre movie version of this story. But we really got to cast a wide net and bring people in who have some serious chops and who maybe bring something tonally to it that's a little bit unexpected.
And also, when Andie MacDowell says she wants to do your movie, you let Andie MacDowell do the movie.
Yeah, definitely.
Were you at all intimidated by working with somebody with that kind of star power, shall we say?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, at first, too, like, I actually grew up in the real Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania. So Groundhog Day to me was like, it was a touchstone, you know, that the movie put us on the map, more or less, literally. And it basically created, you know, and that was like while I was in middle school, high school, and when they were making it. So it was kind of a dream come true for me to work with her. And I know the first time we talked to her, I completely froze and didn't say anything when she asked.
Completely froze.
Who's from Punxsutawney? And I basically just said, I am. And then that was it.
grown yeah, men.
We're like, Chad, please. Van. This wonderful movie star wants to be in our movie. Can you
just talk a little bit?
Just talk a little.
Yeah, totally froze.
Star it was Trek. Like being back in high school all over again.
Right.
Andy, you froze with everybody else. You were all cool.
I mean,
oh, he's dead, Andy.
I think
we
go ahead, Matt.
Go for it. No, go.
I was just gonna say. I mean, I think that we're just starstruck by anybody that wants to be in any of our projects. It's. I mean, I think that we're just such fans of the people that we got to work with on this. It was wild. I don't think there was a day on set that we weren't pinching ourselves, wondering how the hell we managed to cheat the universe and get to be a part of this crazy project.
Having watched the trailer for the movie, it looks like a fun movie. It looks like a lot of people are having quite a lot of fun, you know, kind of chewing the scenery. It looks like Adam Brody does a lot of scenery shooting. Was it as fun to shoot as it? Well, the trailer suggests it's fun.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it was absolutely a blast to shoot. Even though, you know, we were on a tight schedule, so we had to keep things moving. But like, I think the fun of the script, the fun of and professionalism of all the cast members made production just a real treat. Even though we were like, you know, sleep deprived and like working wicked days. We were able to keep a very fun spirit on set, and I think everybody had a blast with it. I know we did for sure.
Was there anything particularly, what were your kind of most memorable kind of moments of the shoot, or was there any on-set disasters while we were shooting?
No on-set disasters, thank God. Most memorable, I'd say, just going into basically every set piece, we had this weird, we did not have a lot of time. So every set piece we had to shoot, there was like this sense amongst ourselves, amongst the departments and the cast, like, all right, let's get it. And we did, which made it really fun. And it was like this real great bonding experience where you kind of go into something, you know, a little underprepared is not the right word. Under-resourced, is that the right word? Like, you know, you don't have everything.
A lot of things working against you. Yeah.
Yeah. And so you go into these moments as a team, and when you come out on the other side, it's just really gratifying. And that happened almost on a daily basis, where it'd be like, okay, we got two takes to get this scene. Let's like, you know, let's go. And you know, everybody really rose to the occasion, and it was a blast.
I mean, I can remember very specifically, you know, the first day of shooting is always particularly nerve-wracking because it just sets the tone for everything that's going to follow. And we shot the really big end sequences of the movie that first week, and so there was a lot riding on those days going well. And coming out of that first day after watching Sam and Andy brawl and the crew, you know, working together for the first time on the shoot, I think that we all collectively breathed this sigh of relief. And it was so gratifying to see all the choices that you make in terms of how you hire people and how you sort of craft the location and how you block a scene. To watch that all work was an amazing, it was a breath of, there was this so much relief. I felt like we all felt like we got it. Like we were on the right track. And
25 years ago. The first of
many days. Yeah, that ended that were as challenging but as awesome and as gratifying as that first one.
So was there a lot of storyboarding involved, you know, particularly as there seems to be quite a lot of action set pieces and you're working on quite a tight schedule? How was that process?
There were definitely a handful of sequences that we did storyboards for in pre-production. But, you know, when we were in those early stages of pre-pro, it became very apparent that the script that we had entered pre-production with was not going to be something that we could actually achieve with the number of shooting days we had. So the hard work of pre-production for us was reducing these sort of bigger sequences down to their most essential and their best moments. And over the course of that, we had boarded probably four or five different action sequences. But by the time we'd gotten through pre-production and were actually shooting, those sequences had changed so much that while the spirit of them was represented in the storyboards, the storyboards were no longer specific to the action. So it was a good exercise. It's always a good exercise for us to explore possibility of what a scene can be, whether or not you ultimately use those boards. It's a great exercise to just get your head visually in what the action's going to be, what the blocking's going to be, and where the camera's going to be, regardless of whether or not you end up being really loyal to them. You know, we'd love to have boarded the whole movie, but it just wasn't in the cards given the short runway to production.
And how did the shoot work? Because I'm always intrigued by this, particularly when it's a kind of co-directing situation rather than just the singular director who might have a singular vision. How do you all interact together? How's the shoot work on one of your movies?
Half as smart as your average director, and we need each other's brains. But no, but seriously, it's we just huddle, you know, and we prepare really well. And we've been working together for like 10 plus years now, and there's like a real kind of symbiotic relationship we have with each other. And we don't see things exactly the same, which is what we like about it. So we can have conversations and discussions and debates, and you know, like in a safe place. But then when we go out to talk to the department heads, to the cast, to the rest of the crew, everybody, there's this real sense of like, okay, we're all on a team together. We're all working together. Now let's go in and do this. And we use the band analogy sometimes, like we come from different backgrounds, like Tyler was cinematographer, I wanted to be a writer, Chad wanted to be an actor. And then somehow we all came together and we're directing. And there's like this sense of, we want to make stuff. And that started when we were making stuff for $0, on, you know, weekends, and we've just kept that work ethic through and through.
Do you kind of work on everything together, or is there particular sections, zones that you kind of, what, this is my strength, I'm working on this, and you know, you guys can take a step back and
we work on it together. Yeah, no, we work on it together because, you know, one of the great things too is like, while we have all of our strengths, there's kind of nothing better than someone who might not be like well versed in the actual thing. Like if I don't know the technical stuff of certain like camera lenses as well as Tyler, he doesn't understand the acting stuff as well as me. He can still call bullshit on something, and I can still call bullshit on something. Do you know what I'm saying? Where you can still be like, yeah, cool, I get all that, but it's not working. So we have this kind of like nice kind of having an outsider's point of view on the inside for all different aspects, which has always served us really well, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was also wondering, does it make a difference? I know that you have some of your previous efforts have been written by you guys as well. And is it different or more difficult to work on somebody else's material, script-wise?
It's the same, honestly, because like it's something that we, you know, we put our all into everything we do, and so in something like this, it's very much we take ownership of the script. You know, Guy and Ryan wrote a great script, but we have to make it feel like we have some ownership when we're in production, or it just won't work. Which when we wrote it is obvious, but when it's not your script, you still have to find a way to identify with every moment, to understand every moment, to understand the whole the piece as a whole in a way that, that feels like it comes from within you. And that's something that I think, testament to Guy and Ryan, they wrote a fantastic script that we didn't have any trouble doing that because we had, we wish we had written it, you know, it's like, it's so good that we were like, oh my God, these guys, I don't want that kind of talent. So
yeah, yeah.
We'll have to find a way.
And so much of like us putting our ownership on something that we haven't written comes when we're in the active production of the project. You know, one of the things that is very much our style of filmmaking that we brought to this was wanting to shoot in practical locations. I mean, I think, you know, you always love and dream of getting to do a stage build, but for us, and this is fully born of the work that we did in the past, you know, so much of what we wrote when we first started working together was written around what, you know, the various locations that were available for us to shoot at for either very cheap or nothing at all. And for this movie, wanting to let the practical locations that we found really guide and dictate to a large extent how we were going to block the scenes and you know how the characters were going to interact in this corridor or this room. That's a really fun part of the process for us. It's really been around for us since the beginning. That's how we've, you know, out of necessity had to make our work. But it really served us well on this project as well. It helped us get really clear about what was most valuable in the scenes. And it certainly helps that the house in this movie is such a character in itself. But that was definitely another way that we took ownership of what was written and put it in a physical space. And that guides, you know, so much of how the story unfolds.
And would you say you kind of drew just directly from the script, or were there particular films or other sources that you drew inspiration from when making the film?
Yeah, we all hook up there. So anyway, sorry about that. So we stuck to the script in a major way. The script was more than probably anything we've ever shot. We trust this script. We've worked with Guy and Ryan and the producers Tripp and Jamie for 2.5-3 years, you know, on it, and Searchlight, to the point where we could really trust it, which is really nice when you're kind of in the fog of making a movie and you have to just have something you can look at and go like, okay, I know this works. We have to do it this way. We can try this other way, but let's get the thing that we know worked for us for the last year. Let's figure that out. And then as far as other movies go, yes. I mean, so much. We had a list of like 20 plus movies that for one reason or another were inspiring us on this movie. And they range from everything from like Seven to Gosford Park to It Comes at Night, you know, like, mm-hmm. I mean, all the kind of runs the gamut. We love movies. We watch so many movies. I mean, between the three of us, we probably watch 3 movies a night. And it just, it comes through, you know. The list could go on and on and on.
And how long was the process then? For it sounds like it's quite a long process from script to finish. I mean, from when you first came onto the project to, you know, it now coming out.
I mean, it was quite a long process. It took a long time. First of all, like the first time the script was going around town, we actually didn't get it. And then it came back up and we were like, yes, you know, this is something that resonates with us in a way like no other script that we read. And then, so from, I think March of 2016 was when we won Jamie and Tripp, Jamie Vanderbilt and Tripp Vinson over, who are the producers on the film. And from there on, we did the long and arduous task of like developing and then going out to talent first and seeing if we could attach anybody that way. And we just didn't feel like that was the right way to do it because we felt the script was so strong. So we ended up just doing direct studio pitches. And then we got Searchlight on board by that fall, so fall of 2016. And then we had other hiccups come up. Like we needed to change the script and rework a lot of the structure, not the structure of the script, but a lot of like, I guess the plotting devices and stuff like that. And we made it a single night of a wedding, and we wanted our
our hero to be in a wedding dress the entire time. And that took another little bit of time to do it. And then finally getting the budget to where it needed to be, to where Searchlight trusted we can make the movie properly and get it out into the world in a way that we all were on the same page for. That finally happened last summer. And then we all got on a plane, went to Toronto, and we only had 5 weeks of prep and 25 days to shoot it. And that was all fantastic. And then for the last 6 months, we were all like locked in a closet together and with our editor, Terrell Gibson, who was fantastic, and knocked it out. So it was quite a lengthy process, which actually made the movie better. We were thrilled with the development, and we got it to a right place. And we cut out the things we didn't need before we got into production, so we didn't have any deleted scenes. The project definitely was better because of the process. And I think we're all very, very happy with the result.
The sort of short way of measuring the time it took is the age of Matt's child.
Exactly.
I have a 3-year-old. And when we started this process, he was not yet born.
He turned
3
last week. Wow. Yeah. Well. Yeah. Sorry. It was indeed quite a lengthy project. Well, it must be incredibly gratifying to finally have had its premiere. And how was that? How was it at Fantasia? What was it like watching it with an audience? I presume you were in attendance.
Yes, it was incredibly gratifying. Not only just the feeling of having reached a finish line with something that throughout. I mean, it's a miracle that any movie gets made. I mean, it's even crazier when you get to make something and you really love the process and you love the outcome, and then getting to share it with an audience at Fantasia in Montreal, which is just the most incredible, generous, genre loving audience out there. It was just a real remarkable experience. And, you know, we had screened the movie a couple of times for audiences in the preview stage, but those are dry screenings, right? Nobody really knows what the movie's about. Nobody's seen any marketing materials. And so getting to go into a theater with 680 people who know that it's a fun thrill ride, who know that it's scary and it's weird and it's funny at times and it's violent at times, everyone was kind of primed for the experience that we wanted them to have. And we couldn't have been more excited by the response. It just feels really good to have made something that that at its core, you know, is just an entertaining, fun ride. And the audience at Fantasia definitely confirmed that for us. So yeah, it was a very amazing experience.
And are you looking forward to bringing it to a London Fright Fest as well? I don't know if you'll be in attendance for that.
I mean, we are fighting to be, but are not sure if that's going to happen. But are so jazzed that it's going to play out there, and have heard the same thing said about the audiences at Fright Fest out there, that it's an incredibly raucous crowd, and this is definitely the right movie for that audience.
Well, I mean, definitely it's one of the big genre festivals in the UK, and it's known to be a pretty raucous crowd. I also noted from the early reviews from the film, they seem to be very positive as well. Are reviews something you read or care about?
No, of course not. Yeah. We don't read any reviews, and we don't care. yes, we are unfortunately still we've been reading those reviews, partially because the screening was so fun, and it's, you know, it is. Sometimes it can get masochistic to read reviews, but and we don't like to indulge it, but like that screening was so fun, and you know, also you spend so much time on something and you're curious what people think. you just want to know, like, are people connecting? Do they like it the way we like it? I, you know, it's not like a personal thing. If somebody hates it, we're always kind of interested in what the takeaway is. So we try not to be too hard on ourselves when we read them, or take them, you know, like, don't make too much of them either way, because I think that'll just end up kind of fucking with your head. But we do read them. Sorry, guilty pleasure, you know.
Yeah, it's also kind of a part of the job of making something is to understand that you're creating something that people are supposed to have opinions about. If people don't have opinions about it, then no one's watched it. And then what's the point? So it's a hard balance, but there's value in learning how to be a better filmmaker and reading reviews. Just like Matt said, it's all got to be grain of salt.
Has there been reviews like that for you that particularly resonated, that you feel like you've taken something from, rather than just like, you know, purely critical ones, but like, I mean, and kind of made you rethink something that you did?
No. Well, you definitely find like little things, like reviewers catch little things that we may or may not have discussed in a way that they really latch onto, and then they kind of make the whole review about that one little thing rather than it being, you know, as all the other things going on, which is fantastic, because that's what it should be, right? I mean, people should watch movies and make it personal to them. So those are the reviews that I know I like the best, are the ones where they see one little nugget of something in a character or a character's plight, and then they latch onto that, and they dissect how that affects, you know, the rest of the movie, and also, you know, the rest of how that applies to everyday life. And I'm like, that's the fun of it. There are those ones. There are also, and then on the opposite hand of those, there are reviews, or even worse, reviews of like the trailer where people just start assuming what the movie is, and they're like, no, that's not it at all. Like, how can you even write stuff like this when it's not that in the slightest, which are also fun to read. But like, that's great. Like, we want people talking about these movies. We want people to have a discussion about it, and we want people to have opinions about it, or else we wouldn't be doing it. Like, we don't want fives on a scale of 1 to 10. We want high numbers, 8, 9s, 10s, and 1s. Yeah, like, you know, if it's going to really
like a 7 is cool.
7 is cool too. Yeah, but like, you know, if it's going to bump you, there's no why it bumped you.
Whatever gets that tomato score up. You know, that's all that matters.
Just a bunch of solid sixes.
Tomatoes. Yep. We love watching our three years of work reduced to a percentage.
Yeah.
That must be pretty brutal sometimes.
I feel like there's also something we had our, I think we were kind of forged in the fires of the early days of YouTube, which is, I mean, if you've ever sent a tweet or made a thing that was posted online, you learn very quickly that the anonymity of the web to find, and it's a particularly aggressive way to learn how to take creatively. You know, working in that space together, that's how we got our start. So it is a. It still hurts though. The bad ones still hurt. You know, you never make a project to get bad views. That's not the goal. But it's also definitely easier to take a bad review when it's easier to share in the good times with your collaborators and to commiserate in the bad times. So it's one of the other benefits of being a group of three.
Yeah, I was...
At the end of the day, just to add to that, at the end of the day, when you talk to someone, you know, face to face, and they for some reason connected with something you made, you're like, oh, that's it. That's valuable. That's so worth it. Just this one person identified with something, it spoke to them in some way, and that connection is kind of what everything's about. So, you know, just take it or leave it with everything else.
Yeah. It's just interesting to hear your kind of relationship to that, because I know some filmmakers are can be sniffy about reviews, or particularly angry if they get a negative reaction and stop reading reviews. So it was interesting to hear.
I can tell you what actually does make us angry. I probably shouldn't, but I will.
Go ahead.
It's frustrating. The truly, well, you know, a nice honest conversation.
Yeah.
The truly frustrating reviews are not good or bad. When you get a good or bad review, if it feels like someone liked it or didn't like it for whatever reason, that's fine. Totally 100% cool, whatever. The reviews that are frustrating are when it feels like people didn't watch the movie and or paid like no attention or were like on their phone or like, you know, sometimes you get people tweeting during the movie what they think about the movie. And that just seems unfair to everybody involved because you're not actually doing the thing you say you're doing. And I think those always are frustrating where everything is wrong about the movie and yet, you know, we can never say anything. We can never be like, well, you clearly weren't paying attention for half the movie. And that can be frustrating mainly because there's no, it's not a two-way street, you know, you world, and then everyone has, you know, the right to their opinion and their thought on it. And that is what it is. And it's just part of the experience. So, you know, and over the years, kind of like Tyler was saying earlier, growing up in the YouTube version of it and kind of learning it all there, you just kind of get used to it.
Yeah, and you learn to decipher the good faith conversations from the bad,
exactly.
The bad faith conversations. And, you know, we are totally fine when people don't like something. What we like the most is if they don't like it and are able to express in a way that is true to what the movie is, why. Happy to have that. And by the way, we're also happy to engage in conversations about why people didn't like it, as long as it's a good faith. They've watched the movie in good faith and that their opinion about it is, you know, is about the actual movie instead of some weird version of it that just didn't, that we didn't ultimately make.
I mean, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, that's, yeah, it's terrible when people just don't properly engage with something. I think I'm dead against anybody tweeting their fucking opinion in a cinema. You know, just watch the movie.
It's insane. Just, yeah, watch the fucking movie. Like, maybe the thing that you think you don't like right now is setting you up to not like it for a specific reason. You just have no idea, you know? And I mean, we're all victims of it at some point, but, you know, being harsh on a movie for the wrong reasons. And then, you know, yep. Is what it
it's
is.
Also this idea, like understanding that no movie is made in a vacuum. It's that there are so many people and that are involved in the process before you see a single frame of a movie. And there are so many opinions and there's so many people working to make it good that, that if you're tweeting an opinion about it before you've even seen it, that's the most frustrating, ridiculous thing. But yeah. Moving on,
we could go on. And on. Yeah, but you know, in a nutshell, we don't care. We don't read it.
I get that it must be. I get it must be frustrating, and I get that there is this kind of culture of, you know, like trailer breakdowns and all that, and people having very preconceived notions of what a movie is going to be with very little information, but. Anyway, yes, let's get back to your movies and Radio Silence. So how did you first come together and why Radio Silence? What was the name?
Well, that's a good, great question. We've been working together forever. So I know I moved to LA in 2006 and the first day I signed the lease in the apartment, I went to an acting class and I sat down in the back row next to Matt and we're like, all right, cool, let's see where we could take this. So we did a couple and that was great, and then Tyler joined us and we all started making stuff together. And then after Rob left and we're like, yeah, we need to rebrand and like do something a little bit more inclusive for a name. And so when we were working on our segment of VHS, they needed a name. And we were like, well, how about Radio Silence? Because it was a name that we tossed around from people like taking meetings around town and being like, yeah, man, we'd love to work with you. And they're like, great. And then we'd follow up and then we wouldn't hear anything back. And then we
reach out again, and it was just radio fucking silence. So we're like, let's use radio silence as a name and just keep making things ourselves and keep making them the way we like to make them. And then it kind of stuck. So that was 7 years ago. So we kind of made it our company name, and we like to go by that for now.
And how did that all come about? You mentioned VHS there, which was kind of your big screen breakthrough. The kind of rest of the directors on VHS, Adam Wingard, Ty West, David Bruckner, I can't remember.
Glenn McQuaid.
I'm sorry, Glenn McQuaid.
and you can't mention VHS without Brad Miska and Roxanne Bennett.
Right.
Yeah. But the kind of directors of the segments had all had kind of previous, even if they hadn't been big hits, like cult hits. I know Glenn McQuaid's movie, I Sell the Dead. So,
yeah, right.
But yeah, they'd all had something. But you guys, you know, kind of coming out of it pretty fresh. So how did that happen? How did you come on board?
Yeah, we were the underdogs. It was Brad Miska had reached out to us. He was a fan of several of the shorts that we made, digital shorts that we had made. And Matt, what was that? He reached out to you.
He didn't so much reach out to us as we sent him a fake email.
We sent
Miska a fake email that said, you know, like, hey, check out this video that we made. It was this short we had all done called Mountain Devil Prank Fails Horribly. And we sent it to Brad, you know, not wanting to, in hindsight, it's like we should have just been like, hey, man, we like your shit. Like, here's a thing we made. Hope you like it. But we sent him an email as like a 16-year-old kid being like, hey, my friends made this. It's cool. You should check it out. And he wrote back, holy shit, I love this. Who made it? Get me in touch with them, please. Themselves. And then he was like, you guys want to do a segment of this VHS thing we're working on?
Wow. The plan worked, though. You know, like...
It totally worked. We were the last...
changed our lives.
Yeah, we were the last folks involved in that process. And when he reached out to us, they were late in the process with the other segments. So when he brought us on board, it was like, we had to boogie. We had like 8 weeks from writing to a finished product, to get the project made. And we certainly were fans of the other filmmakers involved. We had not met any of them. And, you know, we, having made stuff in the digital world, just proceeded to create that short the way that we'd made everything, you know, without really any expectation of where it was going to go and what was going to happen with it. And it certainly went on to do more than we could have ever imagined in our wildest dreams it doing. I remember we were standing at eating burritos at this place called Yucca's in Los Feliz here in LA when we got the call that it got into Sundance, and we all looked at each other like we were in a fucking dream. It was one of the weirdest moments. But there was something about VHS was not made with the pressure of getting into festivals, which is one of the reasons why we think it has such a clear and specific point of view and identity and such like a grindhouse feel. It was just a bunch of people who wanted to kind of take this found footage format and do something new and kind of punk rock with it. And there was no goal in sight. It was just, let's just tell the craziest, weirdest collection of stories we could tell. And then obviously we had the pleasure of getting to know everybody and meet them at Sundance, which was an incredible experience. And they're all our friends to this day, many of whom we work with on projects, and, you know, they see early cuts of things and give notes and vice versa. That was a real moment for us. We became a part of a community that we're still very much a part of today.
So when at Sundance, was that the first time you met the other directors? You kind of all worked in isolation on your stories, did you?
Everybody had made, had produced, had written, produced, shot all of their things separately. I think Ty West, like, he was leaving a sound mix and we were going into a sound mix, and we like brushed shoulders with him very, very briefly. But other than that, it was a pretty we didn't see anybody until we were like roommates in a cabin in Sundance.
And was that a short that you kind of had in mind anyway, that you had written a script for anyway, or was, you know, you had prepared, or was it like once you got onto the VHS project, then you got onto that?
It was a Chad Matt Rob short that we had written. It was for our previous incarnation, where it was different. It wasn't found footage, but the concept of, like, you know, a few idiots go to a Halloween party at the wrong house and get sucked into an exorcism was sort of the story we had had. And then we pitched them when they got in touch with us. We pitched Brad and Roxanne, I think, three ideas, all of which were essentially Chad, Matt, and Rob shorts, were going to be Chad, Matt, and Rob shorts. And that was the one they liked. And they were like, yeah, do that. So then we fleshed it out, totally changed it. It became a very different thing when we actually made it. Because like we were talking about earlier, you know, once we have the idea, we figure out where we're going to shoot this, how are we going to shoot this, who's going to be in it. And at that time, it was just all our friends. I mean, in that movie, it's like, it's the three of us on this call and our friend Paul are just the guys going to the house. And then from there, it kind of just took shape once it was like found footage and all that stuff. But yeah. So it was a Chad, Matt, and Rob short that would have been very different had we done it that way. And yeah. I actually think Rob was going to be in it for a second.
He was,
but then decided not to.
Right.
Yeah, so we called Paul and we're like, hey, Paul, you want to be in this random thing we're doing? Might be cool. And that became VHS.
We should also say that when we first submitted the outline for the short to the collective and to Brad, it was unanimously believed that there was no way we were going to be able to pull off what we had written. And for us, I mean, having not, we'd made a few little shorts in found footage, and we knew that there are so many ways to sell an effect for next to nothing in that style. So we promised them that we could pull it off, and I'm not sure the story changed much from what we pitched them to what we ultimately ended up shooting.
It didn't. It changed very little.
So was
in large part because we didn't have time.
No time to change anything.
So yeah. So what inspired the decision to make it found footage? Was that a budgetary decision or like an artistic decision?
That was
a part of VHS.
Yeah, decided to be. Yeah.
No. Yeah. Of course. Yeah. How many kind of like, what was it like after post VHS? Obviously, it's very successful. It became a franchise. It was at various festivals.
We all bought houses and yachts. And
it's amazing that I have Wi-Fi reception on this island in the middle of nowhere.
I suppose I more meant like in terms of. You must have been
different
projects and stuff. I know that you are, but like
No, I mean, we had a blast. Like going, like, you know, honestly, being able to go to Sundance was like the highlight of it. It was like a lot of fun. And then South by Southwest was a blast, and we had fun with that. And then we spent a good part of that year like trying to find what exactly to do next. We even briefly talked about turning our segment into a larger feature that. We still loved the idea for, but that ended up not working. We couldn't get the deal done with the collective. And then John Davis brought us Devil's Due, which at the time was called Unwanted, which isn't the best name for a script ever. But it was called Unwanted, but we jumped into that with the writer and that opened the door for us at 20th Century Fox. And they were down for the experiment of doing another found footage movie. And that one, we did try to get that one not to be found footage for a little while, but we ended up like going back to the found footage, you know, medium for it and getting that project done. And that one moved a lot quicker than say Ready or Not did. I think that one kind of flew.
It was like, 18 months, right?
From like, we got on until release was 18 months. So that one was like really, really quick, but opened up some doors. And then with the VHS stuff, we weren't really included with the other projects. But it was kind of cool seeing it be like this own little indie beast. And it was kind of fun. Like VHS 2 is great. We really enjoyed that one. And then I know they did like something even smaller and viral with Snapchat recently. So to see that it still has legs was kind of, that's kind of like just humbling in a way.
There was a really part of what was so cool about that Sundance experience too, was this idea that, I mean, going into it, our YouTube videos had, I don't know, probably 100 million plus views. And it was so interesting to go into Sundance and sit in, it was at the library, right guys? The library theater.
Yep. Yeah.
It was, I think 400 people, but that audience of 400, those eyeballs, there's a value in that experience that, you know, that trumped 100 million some odd YouTube views. And I remember we were so nervous. We were so anxious at that premiere. And once people were on board, you could tell like the first laugh or the first jump scare, we were like, holy shit, this is a crazy experience to get to be in a theater with the movie and watch people react in real time. It was something that we hadn't had the experience of before. And it's pretty exhilarating and it's addictive. it's a really, really fun, really fun experience to get.
I was going to ask it as well, you know, what was the transition like? You know, because obviously you went from doing the YouTube stuff to being part of VHS and then going on to do a studio picture. What was that like? Was that particularly nerve-wracking? You were doing a feature with a major studio like 20th Century Fox. And how was that process? How was it working on a studio picture as opposed to independent stuff?
You know, there definitely were growing pains. I mean, it's a much larger process and there are a lot more people involved in the conversation. But for us, I mean, we actually had a really great experience making that movie. The people that we worked with really believed in our weird point of view. And we're certainly down for the cause. I mean, they took a chance on a group of filmmakers. There were four of us in Radio Silence at the time. And that alone, there was a vote of confidence in that was really incredible. And we're so grateful that they took that chance on us. I think emotionally, one of the things that we all came to terms with collectively, but I think we also all individually sort of worked through was, there's this idea when you're making a studio movie that, you know, you've quote made it and that you are a quote director and like, what does that mean? And does that mean something different? And I think ultimately what we realized in the course of making Devil's Due is that you're hired by Fox to make a movie. And what they're hiring you to do is to duplicate what you've done in the first place, which is the reason that they're interested in you creatively anyway. So just feeling confident that, you're there because you deserve to be there because people are interested in what you have to say. And then it's just navigating the process. Again, more voices. It's certainly, while that was 18 months was very short, it was the longest we had ever been working on a single project together. So it was, there were a lot of things about it that were new, but ultimately it was a really gratifying and awesome experience. And we're so grateful that like we've continued to work with Fox. They're got really, really good experience with them on 20th Century side and now with Searchlight. It's been it feels like a really great place to call home. So I guess I should say it is Disney now.
But, that's true. Everything's going to be Disney soon. Seems to be the way everything's heading. So you don't feel you felt. You experienced much in the way of, you know, you hear all these horror stories about studio interference and focus groups and all that kind of stuff. That's not been your experience on Devil's Due or on this latest.
No, I mean, it's, you know, the focus group question is something that is never, but it is an informative experience. And I think on Devil's Due, we didn't know that quite as much. Because it was our first time really doing it, but by the time we got to Ready or Not, we were excited for that because you work so hard on this thing in a enclosed space with very few opinions. And then at a certain point, you want to have new opinions, opinions from people who know nothing about the movie, who might not be the target audience, just to see what's working, what's not. And there's really just nothing like watching something you've worked on in a room full of strangers. It's, you feel everything, everything you kind of were hoping might skate by, you instantly go, oh my God, I can't believe I ever thought that would work. Why did we even try this? But of course you have to try it. You have to see what works. It's a long process kind of finding the final version. And I mean, even on Southbound, we had, we only did it once, maybe twice, where we just got kind of an assortment of extended friend groups together to watch the movie and see where it would go. And even that was so telling. It changed the movie, you know, and in that case, it changed it for the better. I think we didn't have Larry Fessenden doing the voiceover at that point. It felt like something we needed. There were a few other changes that were pretty major that came out of that focus group. So we like it. It's not a fun thing to sit through, but it's very valuable.
And yeah, so it was because I wondered as well, because obviously you did Southbound, but that was just, you know, that wasn't in kind of going back to doing indie stuff because you got burnt that way. It's just because you wanted to do that project. It was just
say that again. Sorry, the last part cut out.
Oh, sorry. Apologies. No, the Southbound. You mentioned Southbound. I was saying that was just because that's something you wanted to do. It wasn't like a kind of return to doing indie stuff because you didn't like doing studio stuff and that.
The Southbound thing was it was very much just out of a love of working with that group. It's, and Miska, Brad Miska, who brought us into VHS, ever since VHS was like, you know, we got to find something else to do together. And then we did Devil's Due, and as soon as we were done, he was like, cool, so what are we doing together next? And then long story short, he essentially was like, listen, just get me a pitch that you guys really believe in, and then I'm gonna go try to get some money for it, and we'll get the other filmmakers together. And so we gave him the pitch for the very most basic idea of that movie, which was just like the whole bookending idea and the loop and the world, but nothing really beyond that, minus our two stories of you meet these two guys who did something bad, but you don't know what. We don't even know they did something bad. Who did something, you don't know what, you're on their side, and then at the end you find out they did something bad, and et cetera. Spoiler alert. But he basically... He basically just got together a little crew for that, and we got to work with Dave Bruckner and Roxanne Benjamin again, both of whom, you know, we had great experiences with on VHS, and then brought in Pat Horvath. And it was just, there's something so great about the experience of sitting around with friends who you really respect creatively and kind of trying to find something to do together. It's not unlike being in a band. You're just working towards a shared goal. So we all thought that would be a few months of our lives, and it ended up taking the better part of a year, but I think we'd all do it again if we had the chance. It was just a real charmed experience.
Yeah, and I would add too that, I mean, Southbound for us, one of the reasons it came about was, you know, for being totally honest, there, Devil's Due, we thought performed well beyond our expectations. Like We are fans of that movie and we'll stand behind what it is. It's obviously, the format was kind of on its way out. And so when Devil's Due released, we were anticipating this, and we knew that we were going to have to like make something of our, on our own again. And that was going to be an important part of staying active. A lot of people make something and then they sort of sit back and they wait for the incoming calls. And we knew that that just wasn't gonna work for us after Devil's Due. So it was super, super gratifying. And we're so grateful to Brad, you know, that he's been so supportive of us and that we got to be at the ground floor of designing that anthology. It was a really incredible experience getting to shoot that with everybody.
And were you involved in getting together the other filmmakers as well? Because you seem very involved in that picture. Obviously, you have the you know, as a group, the framing device, the story, the beginning and end. You know, you were obviously there on the ground level, like you said.
Yeah, you know, that was, and again, thanks to Brad, he had sort of brought us on board very early on to design the to design the kind of structure and the architecture of that anthology. So we were actively involved in bringing those folks together, and it was you know, obviously Brad is so familiar with the people that work in that space. He had incredible input and has amazing relationships. It was a really cool process getting to sort of treat it like a writer's room and design everything whole cloth as a group.
And it seems a bit different from the like Southbound, like, you know, to, you know, the beginning story, the end story that you did as a group. It seems a bit different from the stuff you've done before. In a way, like there's a melancholy to it. There's a kind of a real sadness to it. That's, you know, I think you're more known for doing kind of comical touches as well as, you know, the scares.
Yeah, no, that's definitely true. There's a sadness to it. And I think that's designed into the structure of the story too. Cause we wanted to start with basically the third act. So when we opened the movie, we wanted you to feel for these two guys driving around in this truck and feel that sadness for them. And, you know, and see what their loss was, but then at the same time know what they did at the end. So it comes back around to like, yeah, you know, you can't have two wrongs don't make a right, more or less. And that's kind of like the perpetual loop of purgatory. Is like it just doesn't work out. They don't even each other out. It just it promotes this like circle of wrong.
Sorry, I thought you were
sorry.
Something else there.
Yeah. So I guess that it was different from the other things. And also like going from that into Ready or Not, it's like, all right, cool. Let's get back to our roots. Let's get back to the fun of everything. And like, let's try to do something more akin to our earlier stuff and bring the fun back to it a little bit. It was great to experiment in that world. But we love Southbound for it being Southbound, but like, it's really fun to tackle Ready or Not for being Ready or Not.
And do you think you would do something like that again, or are you more focused on the kind of horror comedy?
No, I mean, if the right script came along, or if we wanted, like, if we got into a story and we felt that that was the best direction to take a story, I think it's open, because we do enjoy the drama and the character development that goes into something that is like that. But I think for the time being, our focus is going to be more on the fun of it all. Like, we had such a blast with Ready or Not, and we think that that's the right tone that we want to play with. So I think we're going to be leaning towards that, at least for the near future.
Yeah, and Ready or Not for us is oddly a return, kind of a return to what we started doing when we first joined up. You know, this kind of big, fun action adventure movies with some comedic elements, but they're all really grounded in character. And then there's this sort of wild genre bend that at some point in time the characters sort of intersect this other movie or this other genre. And Ready or Not was absolutely the sweet spot of that. It was the culmination of what we love about genre movies, but it's also the culmination of what we love about great thrillers and dramas. And certainly there's satire and comedy in it, but it's oddly a kind of a return to what we love about our original, or the stuff we started doing together. And we just got to do it with a really talented crew and a really talented cast. And I think it definitely felt comfortable to be in that mix of genres again. And we certainly would love to continue to make stuff that is all of those things.
Okay, lastly, are you just currently focusing on the promoting Ready or Not, or do you have a project that you're thinking about working on or about to work on or have your eye on?
There's nothing right now that we are currently, that's like in the near future. I mean, the challenge with finishing a project like Ready or Not, when the process has been so charmed, is to be at the beginning again. So I think, I mean, the goal for us is to bring is to bring all of the great things that we learned on that movie and all of the relationships that we made on that movie and try to roll them over into the next process. There's so many variables. So when you find great producers, you find a great studio and you find great cast, it's really hard to, think about jumping into the next thing without that support system. So, I mean, we're reading a ton of stuff. We're very anxious to fill our dance card, but you know, we certainly, whatever we do next, Ready or Not was such a great template of how we want the experience of making a movie to be. So that's leaving that project, knowing that that's possible is really exciting to us. And whatever we do next, our goal is to, it's become the standard, the sort of process that we'll measure all other processes by. And whatever it is, we hope it's as much of a blast as it was to make Ready or Not.
Excellent. Well, it's been great to have you on the show, Matt, Chad, Tyler. It's been great talking to you.
Yeah, dude. Thank you so very much, man. That was fun. We enjoyed it.
Thanks a lot for having us.
Thanks so much, Scott.
That was my guest, Chad, Matt, and Tyler there, all of whom I'd like to thank once again for coming on the pod. Also, if you're in the UK, I recommend that you check out Ready or Not at the cinemas. If you've not already, that is. Sadly, that is the end of another episode. But you can check out all our episodes on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and Radio Public, where we would be eternally grateful if you could rate, review, and subscribe to the show. Also, be sure to look out for our next episode in 2 weeks' time, where we will have another great guest. Until then, though, see ya!